Hey everyone, and welcome back to Pixel Mix, the Pick and Mix gaming podcast. As always, I'm your host Andy Wood, and I'm joined by my co-host Josh.
Hello.
So, this week it is time once again for the Pixel Mix Games Club, and this week we're battling space mechs and bad localization in Konami cult favorite Zone of the Enders.
See how we craftily said cult favorite there. That might be a subtle indication that classic was deemed too strong of a word in the Pixel Mix briefing before this recording happened.
Maybe. I mean, enough people liked it that it got a HD remake, so that's something. That's something. It's always got that to look back on.
I mean, that's something, I guess. But then again, Nightcall got a remaster, so let's not give it to... Was it Night Trap?
Nightcall is the game where you're in Paris as a taxi man. That game should not get a remaster. But,
no, that game should get a remaster.
Well, anyway, how are you doing this week, Josh? What's going on?
No, I'm doing okay, you know, not too much happening in this part of town. Finished my time in Metroid Dread, thoroughly enjoyed that game. We'll talk about that more for the Games of the Month special. But other than that, it's been fairly simple stuff, not much happening. I had to watch all of Succession. I don't know if you've seen the TV show, the HBO drama, because I was interviewing some of the cast for it. And it's 20 hours long and I had 4 days to watch it all. So basically I've developed the tendencies of like a sodden Fox News billionaire. And that this is the only way I could think now. I've watched so much of it. But I would, in now Pixel Mix TV Club, highly recommend Succession. It's a very good TV show. Do check it out.
Yeah, I've been meaning to get around to that. I'm hearing like increasing hype behind it lately, but you know, sadly, I've not had to interview anyone from the cast, so you know, there's nothing pushing me to watch it really. So maybe one day.
But how about yourself? What you been up to?
You know, not much, man. Just playing all of the Games of the Month games. I'm also playing through Metroid Dread, which you know, I'm not quite through yet. Currently getting my ass kicked by the one of the robots that freezes you into a block of ice when you go near it. That's annoying me a little bit, but I'll get past that soon. But yeah, obviously we'll be covering that next week on Games of the Month, along with a bunch of other fun games. Yeah, I mean, this week just been playing some Zone the Enders. Obviously we did have this week the final announcement on the final price of the Nintendo Switch Online expansion pack for the N64 games, which is kind of ludicrously expensive, to be honest. It's near enough double the price of what the online costs now to get some N64 games and some Sega Mega Drive games that you can kind of already get in a collection. So that was a weird one. Where are you at with that one?
I mean, it is too much. Yeah, it is way. It's not necessarily the cost. I don't really mind the cost. I don't think it's crazy high. It's too high, but it's not crazy high. The problem is that Nintendo, you just have no faith in them to support this regularly enough to, you know, because the people say it's only £3 extra a month. Well, that's fine. But if you're getting the same bloody content every single month, what am I paying for? Like, if you're on a rolling subscription, it needs to be updated regularly and often. And the N64 has a small library, and a lot of it is going to be tied up in a lot of licensing issues.
Yeah.
And I'm honestly not certain how easily they can support this and how often they can support this for the money they're going to charge. So that's part of the reason they had to lob in that Animal Crossing DLC being part of a subscription service is wild, and I love it. How does that even make sense?
Yeah.
And I mean, I know that anything that's on your island, it can't get rid of. But I would absolutely love if they did get some functionality where Tom Nook comes around and just boxes up all the shit you're not allowed anymore and drives it out of town.
Yeah, you turn the game on, it does like that intro where they always talk to you, and he's just like, yeah, I see you've let your expansion pack lapse, have you? Well, I think there'll be some changes in your home by the time you get there. You're like, oh, no, Tom, please, don't take my stuff. No.
Timmy and Tommy just baseball bat in hand just smashing up your new lamp. Just absolutely wailing on it.
And you have to watch it all. It's like when you used to turn off Animal Crossing wrong and they made you watch Mr. Rossetti for like 5 minutes shout at you. You have to watch them destroy everything and take it away. You can't skip it. You have to see it happen. It prompts you on a few occasions to buy the expansion pack again if you want to.
But what do you make of? Because I know you were slightly more high on this expansion pack than I was to begin with. Has this put you off slightly, or are you like me going to be a sodden idiot and just buy the stupid thing anyway?
See, I think the thing with me is you can't put me off like a situation where you give me N64 games. Like I'm really high on the N64 as a console, so I'll pay the price. I do think it's too much, and I have the same worries as you. You know, this thing's launching with like 9 N64 games. And let's put the Sega stuff to one side, because like I said, you can literally buy like Genesis Classics Collection for £10, and then you've got all those games anyway, like for yourself. So that barely even registers for me. So you got 9 N64 games here. And yeah, they've promised that, like, I think they've named 6 more that are on the way, and there's some good stuff in that 6 as well. There's stuff like Paper Mario, Majora's Mask, Mario Golf and stuff. So there's some good games coming later, but I'm the same as you. Like, why would we have any confidence that they can, after the original 9 and those 6 have been added for 15 games, like, how often are we going to get a game here? Are we going to get one every 3 months? Are we going to get, you know, maybe initially one a month and then that'll very quickly stop? Like, because that's kind of the way that it's gone with the Super Nintendo and Nintendo collections. You know, they started off with a bunch of big hitting games, and then by the end of it, you know, you wait 3 months and then you get 2 pieces of shit no one asked for. Like, you know, are we going to get like a year down the line when my, you know, subscription needs to be paid again? And they're like, well, you know, if you sign up now, next month we're adding like Glover. You know, am I gonna wait for Glover? Is that what I'm doing? Like, it's just, I don't know. It seems, yeah, overpriced. But I'm an N64 kind of fanatic, really. Like, I've bought 2 of the controllers, and they're like 40 quid each. So I got my 2 N64 wireless controllers coming, which I see are now sold out, because of course they are. You know, Nintendo will never stock enough of these things for people. So yeah, I'm somewhat glad I've got the controllers, because I do love the 64, but I'll just have to see how it's going with this thing. I could see a situation where in a year's time, there's literally only the 15 games they've already told us about on the service. So yeah, I think for the casual fan, it's a tricky prospect.
Indeed. If you was a true friend, you'd send me one of those N64 controllers, because I can't buy one now, because Nintendo both wants to fleece me and not let me give them my money at the same time because of the world's stupidest company. So yeah, you know, just send one my way. I'm sure you won't mind. You've got a spare. What do you need 2 for?
I mean, I'll tell you why I bought 2, because again, being a big Nintendo 64 fan, I'm well aware that it's incredibly difficult now to get an actual official N64 controller from the time that has a joystick that actually works, an analog stick, because they just made them out of something that was not sustainable. And after they've been used for a certain amount, they just can't stay in place anymore. They completely break. And I'm deeply worried they've made these from the same exact like technique and material. So I essentially bought myself a backup controller. This isn't about having friends. I'm not having someone come over and play N64. It's more for me. I need more controller for when the first one inevitably dies.
I'll make you an offer you can't refuse. How about £41? Oh. That's a whole pound profit, dude.
Man. I feel a bit dirty now. I feel like a scalper. I can't be doing that to you.
And I won't pay postage. You're gonna have to cop that cost yourself.
You know? No, I can't. If I start scalping these, Josh, next thing you know, I'll be scalping Xbox mini fridges. You know, it's a slippery slope, man.
There's a very different podcast if we just become scalpel mix. Scalpel mix. Scalper mix.
Yeah, scalpel mix is a different show.
That's like a very different show. It's a
mix of surgery and ripping people off for gaming products. It's both of them. It's a mix. It's nice.
It's a very different podcast.
Get a bit of everything.
Look forward anyway, to that launching next week. Yeah. Next week, scalpel mix.
Well, yeah, that's next week, though. Next week is scalpel mix. This week, we should probably get to Games Club.
Ugh, no. Okay, this week on Games Club, we are covering Hideo Kojima's somewhat involved classic, Zone of the Enders. Now, this is a mech shooter released back in 2001 on the PlayStation 2, back when Konami were releasing video games, and quite regularly.
Crazy.
So, you know, this game had a bit of a... It's a bit of a cult classic in its own way. It didn't sell hugely well at the time, but it's been fondly remembered, and as you say, it does have a HD collection, so it must have somebody who liked it. Those don't just appear out of nowhere. So we're going to talk about the first game mainly. We are going to touch on the second, because we've both played a bit of it. You completed it. I've only played like an hour. But the bulk of this review will be on the 2001 original. And that's a shame, because it's not as good as the sequel. But we've got what we've got. I'll let you kick off.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's an interesting one. As we get into it, it'll become more clear. But I think both games have pretty interesting ideas. Like the second game goes in a different direction, and in a lot of ways that's good, but it does lose some of the charm, I think, of the first game. So yeah, anyway, yeah, Zone of the Enders. I mean, first of all, I felt somewhat shortchanged by this because we obviously picked this thinking this is a Kojima game. You know, we can play a Kojima mech game, and then we can frame Game Club around Kojima. And then it turns out Kojima had absolutely minimal involvement in Zone of the Enders. He was a producer who oversaw the project, and that's pretty much it. He gave them the odd hint and tip, but this is actually not really a Kojima title. So yeah, I think there's better games to frame Kojima around for Games Club in the future. This is more just a Konami product, really. But yeah, look, getting into it, Zone of the Enders is a space mech combat game. This is set in, I think you play most of this game on the kind of on a colony outside of Jupiter, and it gets attacked by some bad guys. And yeah, throughout the course of a weirdly small kind of 4 to 5 hour campaign, you go off on missions into different parts of this colony, and the idea is that you're protecting the people who live there, protecting the civilians, you're fighting off these mechs who are invading and attacking. And yeah, you kind of do that in a somewhat simplified way. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. This was a really weird game. I did not get what I expected from this. I thought this was going to be a full-on action game. And it turned out in the end, it was, I don't know, somewhat too simple to be an action game for me. I'm not sure where I fit this game in the kind of genre picture.
Yeah, it's a little bit tricky. It wasn't quite what I expected to be. I expected to be slightly more high octane than it is. Certainly when you are in combat, it's moderately exciting, but it's never quite as thrilling as I hoped it was going to be. But maybe that's just by the way that you approach enemies in this game. On the whole, you only have to deal with 3 people at a time, and you'll kill them the same way from minute 1 until minute, 300. That is just one way to kill these dudes. That's it. But we'll park gameplay for now. Let's kind of focus on the story. I suppose that's the best place to start. It's very anime inspired. If you've seen Neon Genesis Evangelion, you've probably already played Zone of the Enders, or certainly a good chunk of it, because you essentially spend this entire game as a very whiny, very annoying child who does not want to be in a mech suit, but has to be in a mech suit. Right? That literally just is Evangelion, pretty much.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't have any of the subtext and interesting ideas that show has. Instead, on the whole, it's fairly simplistic stuff. And so, as you say, you're defending people from the baddies. I don't know why they're doing it. It's never massively explained, to be honest with you. They just seem to be dicks. That seems to be the general plot point.
Yeah, exactly. It seems like, as far as I could tell, and I know that this game has... it's been recorded, really, that this has a quite troubled localization that maybe doesn't make a lot of sense, doesn't get all of the points and messages across that the original Japanese script does. So there is that. That gets a hell of a lot worse in the sequel, actually, but it's apparently apparent in this game too. So, that maybe made me miss a lot of the actual story here, because all I really got is that these people decided, fuck Jupiter. They just came and they were just going to destroy this colony. And yeah, I'm reluctant kid in mech who fell into the mech by mistake because he was getting chased. And now he has to stay in the mech and fight everyone off because he's weirdly capable of doing that for some reason. Never really touched on why, but he just is. He's just really good at this mech for some reason. And yeah, you go around this colony area, which I would say is actually quite cool. I quite like how this is done, especially from a 2001 PS2 game. It's kind of, you do go up to like a technically an overworld, and you're just on this kind of 3D rotating circular kind of colony thing. And it looks pretty cool. It's a nice idea, especially from a game from that era. And, you drop into different parts. You drop into towns, you drop into factory areas, you drop into, like, mountain areas, and you have different missions to do in them. And I don't know, I think that's a pretty cool structure for a game. Like, narratively, I don't really think a lot happened that was worth... I don't know, like, it felt like almost nothing happened in the story. Like how Shenmue is meant to be like 27 parts. This felt like about as much story happened in this as a Shenmue game. You got the initial tiny burst of story, like literally kid falls in mech, kid defeats one enemy, but the really powerful enemy is too strong, and then it ends. That's it. That's kind of the whole game. So I don't really feel like it went anywhere in that respect, but I think it's got some good ideas.
Yeah, it's got some fun parts. I think the game, for the first 80% of its runtime, just never really gets going. for whatever reason. I think a lot of that is, there's so many times in this game where you do drop into one of these locations only for the computer to go, oh, we can't do this, you need to leave now. This happens yeah. about five times, and it's really tedious because at the same time, they give you a slight clue as to where you're meant to go, but they also kind of don't, and you have to drop into each bloody part of the map. Go, is this the part where I do the thing? And it might be, it might not be. It doesn't tell you. You're just kind of hoping you'll smash up the robots that have the password you need to unlock the next part of the game. It's a little bit chugging. It's a little bit stop and start. It never lets itself build up any momentum until you get to those final bits where you finally get to a mountain area and you start working your way through to the big spaceship and the big conclusion, and the cutscenes get longer and the characters actually start talking to each other beyond just whining all the time. You actually have some form of interaction. And then it actually kind of tells a more interesting story about, you know, the idea of being on a battlefield and being forced to kill, even if you don't want to kill. You know, it's war and you've got to do what you've got to do. That's actually quite Kojima, even though he's not massively involved in this. I can see why his involvement would have been asked for, because it's kind of the themes he's touched upon in Metal Gear games before. It's got a lot of that going on. And it does kind of stick its landing in its own stupid way. But it's just so back heavy for me. It's a 3.5 hour game where the last 45, I was actually starting to get quite into it. And then it just goes, oh, we're going to stop now. To be fair, I said it sticks, like it doesn't stick the landing. Everything up until the final boss is quite fun. And then it just goes, we've run out of budget now, we need to end. And it's a little bit clunky.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think, you know, sticks the landing is the wrong term, because it kind of, it's like it just walks for like 85% of the game and then does a tiny little hop. And, you know, maybe it sticks that landing, but it only did a tiny hop at the end. There was no, like, nothing else happened. It was, you know, especially narratively, there's literally nothing in this game story-wise until the very, very end. Until that story, as you were saying, with the enemy that I forgot the name of now, Viola maybe or something, you know, actually some decent little like plot points there, but they don't become apparent until the final 20 minutes of a 4 hour game. So it's a bit kind of, a bit strained up until that point. But let's maybe touch on some of the combat in this game, because you do spend most of your time playing this game fighting. You know, you're in a big fast space mech, you're flying around, you're fighting different robots. It sounds like it has potential to be quite exciting, and I don't know, I found it a bit of a mixed bag. I think that the actual combat, like if you look at the attacks you do and the defending you do from the enemies, is way too simple. Like, you just, as you said, you kind of figure out one thing that works early on and you can just do that and you never need to change it. You'll just do the same attack and you'll win. But at the same time, what I would give the game a lot of credit for is this game has some pretty fantastic kind of cinematic camera work for a 2000s PS2 game. Like, you do kind of, as you're flying around with your big robo guy, you do kind of, it does feel quite fast paced. It feels cinematic and quite action packed. It's just that when the combat then happens, that doesn't really play its part there.
Yeah, the combat, it's a bit of a mixed bag, isn't it? I think in close range, it's quite fun. The actual big sword stuff of the mech game is pretty decent. You can dash around people and get bigger slashes in and, you know, hack away at the body armor. I think there's a real problem with the long-range weapons in this game, in the sense that they just never hit. They never hit. And if they are hitting, God knows I can't tell that they are, because it seems to cause minimal damage at the very best. It also gives you a series of weapons that you pick up throughout the game, and I don't know, maybe one of them is useful. You could get like a gauntlet pinball weapon like later on in the game, which just decimates folk, which is pretty handy to have. But on the whole, you won't massively use them either. You're just going to get stuck in this endless loop of just go up to somebody, hit them in the face with sword, hope they don't have that annoying laser attack, which just drains your sodden health bar like you would not believe, and then just move on to the next fight. The camera work can be quite exciting. It can be quite visceral and quite, you know, swoopy and all over the place and give you that kind of mech feel, but at the same time the camera controls are a little bit awkward, because everything is mapped to the left stick, and basically the camera moves when you stop still and then it'll swing behind the character. And when you're in the throes of a boss fight where there's more stages to it than just the regular enemies, which you can knock off pretty quickly, that can start to glitch itself out and get into all sorts of weird contortions before you even know where you are. It's okay. It's hit and miss. It's hit and miss. It's not dreadful. I got the hang of it pretty quickly, but I never quite felt comfortable with it either.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think, you know, it serves a purpose for a game that's 4 hours long, I would say. You know, I think if you double the length of this game, I think there needs to be more depth. There needs to be something else happening. Even if it's just changing the encounters up a bit, because you touched on it briefly earlier, but one of the key problems with Zone of the Enders is that you'll drop into a city with maybe like 20 enemies in or 30 enemies, but it will always separate them into groups of two or three. And you only ever really fight like two or three things at a time. And you just get so comfortable with winning those battles because you've fought three of the, you know, you fought three of that particular enemy before. You fought two of this enemy and one of another before. You never really get tested by like all of a sudden there's more going on now. You've got to maybe like watch your back while you fight those ones. It just kind of does one type of encounter, and that's it, outside of like the odd boss fight, but even they're pretty rare. So I think, yeah, you know, it just doesn't do enough. There's not enough kind of dynamic like differences in each combat encounter in this game. That's one of the big issues.
Probably not helped by the fact that the enemy type, I think there's two.
Yeah,
there's a big bell and then there's a mech which looks a bit like you. Yeah. And they increase in level as you go along, and so do you, but I have no clue what is gaining me level. It just seems to happen at an arbitrary time. I think it's practically happening on a rail almost. Mm. You know, it's just keeping me up with what the enemies are later. But the fact is, they're pretty beatable at level 1 and then they're pretty beatable at level 8, and it doesn't really matter what they are. It feels exactly the same. The boss fights are kind of fun, but again, it's backloaded. All the boss fights are at the end. There's like a run of four of them, and they're actually really enjoyable. But before that, you had one boss fight, and then the rest of it is just go pick up this thing, just endless fetch quests on this overmap, which... I mean, aesthetically, it's interesting, but they decided to go for an overworld. I think it is exciting for a 2001 game to be trying that, but it is bland.
Yeah,
like
sure.
all these maps look essentially the same. You can't radically tell the difference. And they're so small as well. It might as well have just been levels, because you just go in between just chunks of map. That's all. It's almost like the destroy all humans trick. It feels like it's an open world game, but it isn't really. It's very much a single small map which you're going to conquer, and you know they all look fairly much of a muchness. It's perhaps a little disappointing. They couldn't at least give me something to fly around and swoop in and around, and obstacles in the air to avoid. There's nothing really there to worry about.
Yeah, that's true. I think one of the issues as well with the overworld is that they kind of tease this idea quite early on that there's going to be like, you know, like side content to go and rescue people, and that, you know, you kind of have to put yourself out to maybe do these extra challenges that, you know, might maybe impact the main story in some way. And like basically that ends up never being the case for one. And another thing is that all of the side missions in this game total about 25 minutes of content. So it almost felt pointless having a different path to the, as you said, you know, it could have just been level based because there's so little deviation from just doing the main storyline. You'll get literally, I think it's three times in the whole game that they'll say to you all, you know, can you head back to this place and do like a rescue mission? But even then, a rescue mission is just going back to the same area, fighting the same groups of two or three robots. But this time you have to try and not knock them into buildings, because then you will technically have killed survivors. That's like the only thing that changes between those missions and just any other mission in the game. So, you know, I think in another world, if they'd really expanded the open world idea and maybe had some kind of narrative points where you had to make decisions, and, you know, maybe there's two missions, but you can only get to one and they have different rewards for which one you go for. Like, there was potential there, but I don't know, maybe 2001 was too early for that kind of, you know, maybe people hadn't mapped out that kind of stuff so much yet. But there was something there, just didn't quite pan out.
Yeah, you're right. It's an interesting idea. I'd have liked to have seen the figures maybe impact difficulty later on, or to, you know, impact the story in some way, to have it mentioned that I at least tried to save people and to, you know, go and help these folk out. But it's not really mentioned. As you say, I think there's five in total side missions.
Oh, okay.
And they're all the same apart from one where you have no health. That is literally it. Every other mission is the exact same. You just go in, you try not to blow any buildings up. I don't really know how to not blow buildings up. Like, I assume I have to drag them away from the buildings, but that sounds tedious. So I just ended up blowing the buildings up and just taking my C grade and moving on. But yeah, as you say, it's a fun idea. It's a nice touch, but it's just not developed enough. It's an old game. It's 20 years old. I'm not going to rag on it too much for not doing investing side mission design at that time, because not many people. Well, I mean, I think even GTA 3 had only just come out in 2001, and that's when these sort of things started to become massive and huge.
Yeah.
So it's cruel to judge it too malignly, but when I was desperate for a palate cleanser to slightly break up what I'd already been doing for fucking ages, it then turned around and went, I'm sorry, it's just the same again.
Yeah.
But now you need to do it a bit more carefully. That's not great. I mean, the only other variation in gameplay beyond blowing fins up is collecting these fins they call, what do they call them, a pasta? A porter.
They call them a porter.
And I don't know what a porter is. It's never explained. I dare say I'll never know. And you just have to go about shooting them. It's like the world's most tedious fetch quest. And because the analog aiming is so bad, and you have the cursor right over it, and you think, well, I'm going to blow this fin up. I mean, it just misses, and you just think, where the fuck am I meant to aim into this?
Yeah, those things are a disaster, because the problem is, obviously, that the entire game's combat is based on locking onto enemies, and it works really well when you're fighting the big robots, because, as we said, the camera kicks in, and it's all cinematic. You kind of keep locked onto that enemy, whereas you can't lock onto these weird little porter things you're meant to shoot. So you just end up standing next to them. Like, imagine how stupid this mech must look like narratively in this world. Like, this is really happening, and it just stood right next to a thing, very slowly arcing its arm up and down and firing, but like, nope, missed again, just tilt to the right, oh, I keep missing, like, tries to move back a bit. Like, it's so clumsy. It just, the game was clearly not meant for trying to shoot targets without locking on, and the fact you couldn't lock onto them, like, in some levels, I spent more time trying to aim at those than I did fighting. It just is crazy.
Well, exactly, you know, it's pretty cumbersome. It kind of takes you out the mech fantasy somewhat when you can't even shoot a bloody floated target. You can't even manage that. But to be fair, even the lock-on shooting, it seems to barely hit. I've mentioned this already. I find the long-range shooting in this game dreadful. It's so unsatisfying. It just never... Whenever you fire out a shot, it's almost invariably blocked by the shield. It's just almost certainly blocked. And it's just the only time you'll not do it is when you do a little dash and then the fire button, which sends like a volley of seven to hit somebody. That might hit, and it works particularly well on the bosses. But other than that, it's just, you're going to just be slashing. And it's amazing that a 3.5 hour game fell into drudging repetition so quickly, but somehow it did manage it. I guess one positive, which I did like all the way through, I think the music's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty pounding. It's pretty fun to us. It certainly gets you quite hyped. It's got like a really thrusted techno beat, which just seems to get louder and louder every single time that you enter a fight. It's kind of fun. It's kind of cool. And there's some brilliantly typical anime style pop songs to open the proceedings and then the sad song to close the proceedings. And yes, I thoroughly enjoyed that. It was to form. It's what I wanted. So the music's pretty good. I guess we can give it that.
Yeah, definitely. And that was one of the actual rare areas in this game that Kojima had some influence on. Because I think they said that the kind of way that the music adapts as you're playing, like, you know, you get into combat and it alters the music to kind of be a bit more pumped up. Maybe if you like suffer really heavy damage, the music ramps up a bit more to make the like situation more tense. Like, apparently that was something that they kind of worked with Kojima on quite a bit, because he has similar experience of doing stuff like that in, well, you know, even like the Metal Gear Solid games, Metal Gear Solid 2, you know, if you get an alert going, the music ramps up. And then as it goes down to like being a caution situation, it's the same song, but it's kind of changed a bit. So, you know, there's some influence there, which is nice to see. And I think the music's really good. I think, look, realistically, that's about all there is to talk about on Zone of the Enders, to be honest. It's a brief experience, but I would say for 2001, you know, if I'd picked this up on my PlayStation 2 at the time, I think outside of that length, because, you know, value for money was a bigger deal maybe back then, and you're not getting great value for money buying this for full price and being done in 4 hours. But I think the spectacle of it back then would have helped it a lot, you know, kind of seeing these mechs flying around, seeing the camera like look quite visceral as you're flying around, even the animations as you're kind of swinging your big mech sword at the other mechs, it's pretty nice. And I mean, I know we played the HD remake, but I've seen footage of the PS2 version and it's largely been kept the same, but just with the texture boost. So I think they did a really good job on presentation for a lot of this. It's just that, yeah, there's nowhere near enough content, and, you know, maybe the combat system needed like another I don't know, maybe another 6 or 12 months just to put a bit more depth into it and think through some of the ideas here. Because you are right earlier when you said that, you know, if you shoot from a distance, the enemies just block the bullets and nothing happens. It's a strange misstep.
Yeah, it's a little bit clunky at parts. But as you say, the presentation's pretty good. It looks pretty nice. I mean, obviously it's the HD version, so I'm not going to judge too highly on that. But I think it looks good. I think the cutscenes look pretty nice too. There's a lot they've done here, which works quite well. It certainly feels like a mech anime kind of vibe to the whole thing, which I enjoy as well. It does enough to hold my interest. It didn't have to hold my interest for long. It's literally 3.5 hours long. But it did manage to keep my interest for that length of time, and I didn't actively hate it at any point. I didn't think it was too difficult. I thought the difficulty was pitched about right. I think I'd have been a little bit more frustrated if I didn't have a walkthrough to just nudge me in the right direction occasionally to the right place. That would have added some length, but that would have added some annoying length. So I don't know if that would have been high praise. So on the whole, I think it's a perfectly serviceable mech game. I don't quite get where the fan reputation came from. I'm amazed it got a sequel. I'd have thought this would have been a one-and-done situation. Mm. But it does enough right to be an interesting curio. And if you did pick it up as part of Games with Gold, where it was given away for free as part of the HD collection, you could do worse than play it. I'm kind of glad it's off the list, if nothing else. You know, I always kind of wondered what it'd be like. I now know what it's like. It's about a 5 out of 10 video game, but it's not a bad 5 out of 10 by any means. It's just bad average.
Yeah, I don't see it far differently from you. I'd probably give it a 6, just cutting it a little bit more slack maybe for, you know, for its age. You know, realistically, as you said, this is a 10-year-old remaster of a 20-year-old game. And I do think at the time, the kind of the style and visuals of it would have been more impressive, which would have carried it along a bit. I found it fine. I enjoyed my time with it enough. I think, you know, we'll get to Zone of the Enders 2 briefly after this, but, you know, I think if you did get this with Games of Gold, obviously, you know, for whatever reason, these games do have a reputation even today. So I think they're well worth like turning on just to see what they are, to be honest. I completely had this game wrong in my head. Like I thought we were going into a much more Kojima game than we were. And, you know, we got this, which wasn't what I expected, but it was interesting. So, you know, it's something to play if you've got it.
Yeah, I mean, that's about the most damning with faith comments I think I've ever heard on the show. Play it if you've got it. I mean, Christ. Why don't we talk a little bit about Zone of the Enders 2? We'll skip over the Game Boy Advance sequel, which came before that.
Yeah,
we'll come back to that later when we talk about the rest of the series. But Zone of the Enders 2, I didn't get to finish this. I know you just rolled straight into it and powered straight through, but I'll give you my early impressions of the hour and a half that I played. I think it's a much better video game than the first one. It seems to have completely got rid of the overmap, which some people may say robs it of its character. I just felt like I was doing a bunch of missions anyway, so just going from mission to mission makes the story feel a little bit more cohesive in the terms of it's actually following on from itself instead of just you enter world, leave 10 seconds later, go to other part of world. At least you know when you do a mission now, something has to bloody happen. It's something. I actually think the presentation is slightly better as well. The first game had a load of times where you'd just sit in your mech and stare at an empty space and nothing would appear. You were just having long conversations with people and nothing was happening. Now they've at least got some anime, you know, graphics and some, you know, cute little designs of the characters talking to each other at the same time. It's slightly more engaging than the first game was, where it just had nothing there at all. Just a small little bubble that indicated that somebody was talking. And probably the biggest thing is that the shooting's been fixed in the sense that you can now actually shoot people. Which is good in a mech game because it means you can actually play two different styles of game in this one. You can get up front, get up close and slash away, but you can actually now cause some damage from a distance as well. More enemies helps too, a lot more enemies on the screen. Mm. From the hour and a half I played, I felt this was getting much more interesting, a lot more boss fights. I felt this was the better game and it seems to be telling a slightly more conventional story as well, but you've finished it, so maybe it shits all that goodwill down the toilet by the time it ends.
I wouldn't say it shits it all down the toilet. I think you know, it's like, look, yeah, Zone of the Enders 2 for starters, the combat is way better in this game. You know, as you said, there's more enemies now. They'll have situations here where you're fighting, you know, there's tens and tens of enemies just trying to attack you at all times. So you're kind of trying, you need to dodge out of the way. You need to keep your distance, kind of, you know, try and string a couple of enemies in at a time. It's much more enjoyable. It's not the, you know, fight the same two guys repeatedly from Zone of the Enders 1. This is actually a combat game, and it's challenging as well. You do have to be quite quick and quite fast paced with your, you know, your attacks and your kind of strategies here to succeed, especially as it goes further on as well. This game gets really, really difficult later on. It's the one thing that really I really struggled with, actually, was that I was trying to kind of rush this out, and it's only about a 5.5 hour game, but the like final half an hour of game took me about 2 hours at least to get through. It was pretty brutal, but you know, it's for the most part, except for one particularly bullshit final boss, which was insufferable. Other than that one, like most of the other difficulty was reasonably fair. You know, like I felt like I could do it by dodging at the right times, by using the right attacks, by kind of figuring out the trick to beat this particular boss. They have a lot of bosses that have clever tricks in this game, which, you know, it's pretty cool. I think it'll split opinion, to be honest, because on the one hand, it's nice that if you figure out the strategy, you win. But a lot of these bosses are the type where if you don't figure out that hook, you just can't win at all. So, you know, there's frustration there, but with the help of, you know, a quick guide, if you get too frustrated, it's perfectly fine. So yeah, so combat's massively improved. The variety of locations you go to is hugely improved as well. You know, the kind of generic city you pretty much spend all of Zone of the Enders 1 in is gone now. This game goes between, you know, you spend a lot of time early on in this kind of grimy factory facility, which I was in there for about an hour and I thought, oh no. But then after you get out of there, you go to like this kind of like winter kind of tundra places. You spend some time in a desert. You spend some other time on a big space station. It does bring a lot more variety as you go through it. You know, you do some battles just in just space as well, which is pretty cool. So a lot more variety, much better combat. Yeah, you know, a lot of good things to say about Zone of the Enders 2, to be honest. The only thing that does kill it is I kind of alluded to it in the intro this week, but the localization is absolutely appalling in Zone of the Enders 2. It's at the point where like a lot of the dialogue doesn't even make like narrative sense in English. They clearly didn't quite know what they were taking from the original script. It's really weird. Like the one that stuck out with me was quite early on. There's a guy who's begging you for help because he's going to die, basically going to get killed by these robots. And your guy just coldly tells him that he can't help him. He's like, we can't help you. And then the guy just goes, yes, please. In that exact voice. Like, it's not like, I assume the translation was meant to be like, you know, please, as in pleading for help, but he just goes, yes, please. And it's like, what? So yeah, there's lots of that. Like, honestly, you could realistically just skip all the cutscenes in this game and just play a fun, dumb action game, because even if you watch the cutscenes, you will not understand what the hell is happening, unless you maybe play this in the original Japanese version and you can understand it. But yeah, the English one is a bit of a nightmare. But yeah, other than that, really fun game. I'd give it at least a 7 out of 10. I was thinking 8 for a while, but there is some late game bullshit that dampened my spirits quite a lot. So yeah, you know, it's a good high 7 out of 10. I do think it's a lot of fun. This game actually probably could have done with a sequel. You know, I don't know how it got made in the first place after the first game, but I could have played as Zone of the Enders 3 after this one.
That's interesting, Ted. Do you need to have played Zone of the Enders 1, do you think, to... I mean, I know you say you can't follow the story anyway because it's a shoddy localization, but does having any knowledge of what came before help in any way?
I mean, I honestly didn't give a shit, if I'm going to be honest. Like, you know, you bump into the guy from Zone of the Enders 1. You play as a different guy in the sequel, but you bump into him. You know, you pilot the same mech in this game as you did in the first one, except for now it's obviously got this new guy in. You know, some of the big bosses you run into will be people from the first game. So, you know, it's one of those things. Look, if you... I don't know. I mean, I couldn't follow the story well enough anyway with the localization, so I largely didn't care. I think you could just play Zone of the Enders 2 as a standalone dumb robot action game and just forget about the story. But if you did want to try and follow the story, by all means, spend 3.5-4 hours in the first game first.
It's a shame about the localization, because some really nice animated cutscenes in this game. They look really good. So, you know, they've actually done a pretty good job improving the presentation all around. If only they could have spent a little bit more money getting a better localization team, or, you know, sometimes things just get lost in translation. It's one of those things. And high concept sci-fi mech game is probably high on the list of things where you might lose track of what the original point was.
Yeah, but maybe just
that's the HD collection. Definitely play Zoe 2. For me, you could probably skip the first one, but they're both so short, you might as well play them as a bundle. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the future of the series? I alluded to it earlier. It's basically just a Game Boy Advance game, but what's that about?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, we'll be covering something on this later on in a later topic about Konami. But the series is pretty much dead. This isn't going to be coming back, I don't think. You had the first game in 2001. The Game Boy Advance game, curiously enough, also came out in 2001. So there was definitely a, you know, somewhat of a strategy there to make this series more of a thing, I guess, because, you know, two games in the same year, that's a pretty big start. The Game Boy Advance game is a turn-based strategy game. You basically play on a grid. You've got all your mechs that have different strengths and weaknesses. It looks pretty cool. It came out to mixed reviews, like, you know, sixes and sevens mainly. But, you know, if you like Zone of the Enders, it's there. You know, you get more of the same whatever the fuck story that was in these games. You get 15 hours more of that, apparently. So could be worth a look if you like robots and strategy games. But it's not one I'll be checking out. And then, 2003 was Zoe 2. And that's your lot other than the HD collection in 2012. So, you know, this series seems to be pretty much gone now. Zone of the Enders 2 actually did get a re-release on PS4. I think it was digital only. It came out about 5 years ago. So they re-released Zone of the Enders 2 again, but there's been no signs that they're going to actually make a new game in this series now. It seems to have been dormant for a long time, and I don't get the feeling the interest is there at this point.
No, I don't. I mean, I know the game has its fans. I know it definitely has an audience, but I admit games don't tend to sell well at the best of times. So I don't think a long dormant Konami franchise is going to be the answer to their goddamn hopes. I feel it's probably gone at this point, which may be a shame in many ways. I think it's a cool license with a lot of cool ideas, which maybe with a modern control scheme and some pretty glitzy graphics would be quite a fun experience to play through, to be honest. If you tightened up some of these mech controls, I'd have a go at this game and I'd play a Zone of the Enders 3. God knows what the story would be, but I'd totally play it.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it's Konami and it ain't coming back.
Yeah.
I suppose, though, before we get on to just kicking the corpse of Konami as a welcome feature on this podcast, why don't we talk a little bit about mech games in general? Do you have a preference for how they should be? Is Zone of the Enders how you would want them on the whole, or is there other examples of the genre which you think do it better?
See, I think I'm like, you know, it's a tricky topic is talking about mech games, because I don't necessarily think we're the biggest fans of mech games, but, looking at Zone of the Enders, particularly Zone of the Enders 2, it's kind of getting towards what I'd want from it. You know, realistically, you know, you were saying there, Zone of the Enders 3 made today could actually be quite good. Like, if I'm getting that made and I can hand it to like pretty much any studio, I'm probably giving it to like Platinum Games. You know, I just want these things to be big, dumb, fast-paced hack and slash games. You know, I'm not looking for the intricacies that other people want from mech games. You know, you have a whole genre of mech games like Mech Warrior or Steel Battalion, I guess Armored Core to a lesser extent, that are much more focused on slow. I don't want to say plodding sounds immediately negative, but slow plodding mechs with like tons of giant weapons on them, you know, rockets, missiles, machine guns, all these different weapons. And they're kind of all about customizing your mech for the mission, you know, getting the right setup, getting the right kind of strategy to go in and you know, kick some ass basically. Like that's not for me. I've played a bit of most of those series. You know, back when we were covering Game Pass, I played the latest Mech Warrior, just found it very sluggish, very much a chore to play through for me personally. So yeah, I'm much more, I just want dumb, fast-paced mech combat. You know, like for me, the best mechs I've probably controlled in a video game are probably the mechs from Titanfall. So, you know, I just want that, just fast-paced, you know, just big, massive mech, just dashing around the place, kicking the shit out of everyone. Like that's kind of what I want from this. I just want, like fantasy, fast-paced mech stuff myself.
Yeah, I'd agree with you completely. And I think Titanfall 1 and 2 are good picks for mech games if you did want to play one. Certainly a more action-focused one where the mech basically just controls like a person rather than having to have the plodding awkwardness of the robot. The mech warrior games and Armored Core and Steel Battalion, Christ, the old Steel Battalion control on the Xbox, insane. Yeah. But those things are, in many ways, almost flight games as much as anything else. For me, I'm more invested in the controls of them. Those games are all about learning how to fly and how to pilot this giant monstrosity. And I think that's cool. If you can give the time to, you know, learn the intricacies of the system, I imagine you could have a lot of fun playing those games. But for me, the mech game of choice and the one we very nearly played this month, it was a toss-up between Zone of the Enders and Metal Wolf Chaos, which is a ludicrously over-the-top From Software game. I would say of all people, but of course they do the Armored Core series, so they have a very storied history in mech games. And this was their attempt to just make the stupidest, the most ridiculous mech game possible, where you play as the president of the United States, whose country has come under attack, and you just hop in your damn mech, and you go save the world, damn it. It's just gloriously dumb, and it's a massive spoof of giant American culture and, you know, corporization, and there's a lot to enjoy about it. And I thoroughly prefer that to be my type of mech game, as big, as dumb, and as glitzy as humanly possible. It had a fantastic remaster recently by the guys at Devolver Digital, who passed it off to a studio just to polish it up and bring it slightly more into the modern age, because Lord knows you can't find a copy of the original game these days. And in fact, I'm not even certain it came west. So, you know, this is very cool. Very cool title. Would highly, highly recommend that one. But if you wanted offbeat mech games, I've got two for you right here, which most people say do not even count. Game number one, and somehow managing to worm its way into another podcast, Gato Roboto, is actually a game about a cat in a mech, damn it.
Yep.
You're playing in a mech in that game. That's a fantastic, fun little Metroid-style platformer, which is a lot of fun to play around in. Old Game Boy graphics, fantastic title. And if you wanted your mechs to be even more puzzly, Into the Breach is a wonderful, dense, and horrifyingly difficult puzzle game where you are essentially just controlling a load of mechs trying to defend your units, defend a city. It's quite fantastic, even though I am at least 100% too stupid to make any form of progress in it. You really need to give some thought to do well in that game. But those two are some offbeat mech games if you want to move away from the more traditional format.
Yeah, no, those are good picks, man. I love that we've managed to talk about Gato Roboto again. That's probably our most mentioned game across our podcast ever. So always good to give that a shout out. And yeah, Into the Breach is great. I'm the same as you. I've played it. I'm stupid. I kind of gave up pretty early, but I can see what's there. You know, there's some real quality there. If you like a good, you know, roguelike-ish strategy game, it's good stuff.
Exactly. Well, let's move away from mechs and start talking about Konami. Shall we first, though, before we get the shivs and start a slashing, think about some of our actual favorite Konami hidden gems, those hidden IPs which just came and went with a flash. Any Konami titles you would bring back before we get on to the more obvious selections, which have just been dormant for no good fucking reason for the best part of 10 years.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, I've picked out a few kind of niche Konami games. All of these are pretty old as well and are probably all also dead because it's Konami. But a couple of games I want to give a shout out to is going to start off with, I mean, I'll start off with the PS1 version, then I'll get to the best version of International Track and Field, which is a fantastic just button mash athletics game, which, the PS1 version was very much stayed true to the formula from the original Track and Field, which was obviously an 80s arcade game. You know, you're just mashing buttons to do sprinting and hurdles and pole vault, all these kind of athletics tournaments, all really good fun. But the standout here, the best version of International Track and Field that I've played is the Game Boy Color version from 1999. This was effectively like a Mario Golf style story mode from the really good kind of Game Boy versions, where you actually have to go on you've got stats to level up, you've got training to do to get up the different stats. This was basically a full-on story RPG, about a guy who runs the decathlon where there's 10 different events. So you have to kind of prioritize which one to train for to get your stats up. It's got a whole kind of visual novel aspect to it where you can like date different people and you've got stuff going on in your personal life. And just all this melded together into a 1999 Game Boy Color game somehow. It was bloody wonderful. I absolutely love that game. I'd love to see that come back in some weird form. It was great stuff.
I mean, that's a pretty good pick. I'm thoroughly enjoying that one. I mean, my personal pick, following on from visual novels, I would, and I've always wanted, and was recently reminded of it in a Tim Rogers video. If you've never seen his YouTube stuff, it's very good. I'd recommend it. Tokimeki Memorial, which is a fantastic, by all accounts, dating simulator, which is a genre which gets a little bit of a bad rep. It's known for perverts, perhaps more than it should be, but the Tokimeki games were never really about that. It was literally like trying to find the perfect way to win somebody over. I mean, that is hardcore gaming at its very best, trying to manage your social life, school life, and dating life at the exact same time. And there's a particularly famous version, Tokimeki Memorial Forever With You, that launched on the TurboGrafx and the PlayStation. I think it was on the Saturn as well. I would love to see a localization of that game, or just bring a new one out so I could actually finally get on with some of my dating sim dreams, because that's the daddy of them all, and I would love to give that a go.
That sounds pretty good, man. Yeah, I've never heard of that, actually, so that's pretty cool. I'll definitely do some research on that one. Another game I've got here, which I never got to play as much of that I wanted to. I gave it a try, and I kind of wanted to buy it, but I never did, is Konami Crazy Racers on the Game Boy Advance, which is in many ways the better kart racing game between that and Super Circuit, the Game Boy Advance Mario Kart game. So yeah, this was just straight up fantastic kart racing. It had a really fun cast of like ridiculous characters. So you know, you're going around the tracks as like a Goemon from Mystical Ninja. There's Dracula from Castlevania in this. You got Grey Fox from Metal Gear Solid in a kart. You can race as just the Vic Viper, which is the fighting jet from Gradius, and you're just going around a bunch of car racing tracks. Like, a lot of fun. It was pretty, like I said, it was genuinely better than Super Circuit on the GBA. It was a great game.
That was pretty good. I mean, I think we need to also pay some deference to the wonderful Dance Dance Revolution video games. DDR, what a fantastic series that was, particularly in the arcade where you actually had a hard floor dance mat. So, you know, you didn't have to have the plastic nonsense that we bought, and those little plastic mats, which just would not stay on the floor no matter what you did. And you would inevitably, on a harder song, slip and crack your bloody back on the floor at some point. But in the arcade, god damn, I enjoyed playing those games. I got inexplicably good at Dance Dance Revolution between the ages of 15 to 16, when me and my friends would go to the arcade and play it on a lunchtime, which is ludicrously dumb, but at the same time, we absolutely loved it. Bring back that. Give me an arcade with a good DDR machine, loaded up some new weird J-pop songs. No Western songs. I don't want Western songs. I want weird shit trance and club music. That's what I want. I want weird trance music, but hell of a service. Thoroughly enjoyed that.
Yeah, very much so. I always loved a bit of DDR. There was, of course, speaking of weird Dance Dance Revolution entries, there was, of course, Dance Dance Revolution Mario Mix on the Nintendo GameCube, which came with a bunch of like sort of remixed techno versions of Mario music, which was, you know, that was pretty interesting. The only problem was, of course, it was a home console game, so you did have to use one of those plastic mats on the floor that make you slip over and die. So, you know, there's positives and negatives there, but still pretty fun. I've got one more entry on my set of Konami games here, but this one's a bit of a joke entry, but I just had to acknowledge it. So this is Holy Magic Century, also known as Quest 64 in the US. So yeah, Quest 64 is realistically the only RPG that came to the N64 for like its first 5 years. Like, not until Paper Mario did the N64 have another RPG. And I don't know, just shout out to Konami for trying to make an RPG work on the N64, because, you know, Nintendo people got, like, fans got kind of screwed back then. You know, the Super Nintendo was the RPG machine. You know, that had Final Fantasy, it had Chrono Trigger. It had a bunch of smaller series as well, like Lufia Luna was on there as well. Ton of great games. And yet the N64, all of the RPG developers just abandoned it because, for the stuff they wanted to do, it made more sense to be on CDs, which had more storage space. You know, they want to do cutscenes, they want to do music, and they could do all that over on the PlayStation. So everyone went, and then it was just Konami with Quest 64, a a quite shit RPG, but at least it existed. And also a special shout out to the lead character in this game, who has probably the second worst name of any lead character in an RPG I've heard. Just called Brian, Josh. Just Brian, nothing else. Just Brian. He's a little magician, and he's called Brian. So you go, Brian. Good job.
You go, Brian. Go find Alan from Albastia Chronicles.
Exactly.
Have yourself a Marvel team up. One final one for me, and I'm going to mention Bloody Roar, the old fighting game series. Now, before the gosh damned, you know, nitpickers come shouting at me, I know it was a Hudson Soft game. But tragically, and in the worst turn of events, Konami holds the bloody rights to the franchise and has never made one, because of course they haven't. It's fucking Konami. Of all the companies to get the rights to this wonderful 3D fighter where you'd switch between human and their animal counterparts on the flick of a button and just slash and tear people to limb from limb. What a wonderful game series Bloody Roar was. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was one of my favorite fighting games growing up, other than Soul Calibur. And I would love to see it come back in the modern age. It'd be so much fun. You could do so many good things, but Konami tragically owns the rights, so it's never going to happen.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I guess that leads us perfectly onto our next topic here, which is, you know, to discuss the fact that, you know, Konami are basically the worst IP hoarders in the gaming industry, and I don't think anyone will ever surpass them. You know, we've just spoken about a variety of games we enjoy, which all of which are dead. You know, I mean, fair enough, Quest 64 should be dead, but a lot of the other ones, good stuff there that's just not coming out anymore. And then, you know, you look around even the top IPs that Konami own. You've got Castlevania, you've got Metal Gear Solid, Silent Hill, Suikoden. All of these series are just... they're just kind of dead now, right? Like, how, like, it's been forever since any of those series have released a new title. You know, you get the odd cash grab remaster collection from Castlevania. You know, we just got the Game Boy Advance games released in a collection now, and that's it. There's never any sign of a new game coming out from any of these, and it's just depressing to see, man.
It's mind-bogglingly dumb, because we've got to the point now where not only do they just sit on these licenses for no reason, but the creators of these games are just making their own spin-offs at this point. I mean, Castlevania now has Bloodstained as a competition because they would not let Koga Igarashi make a new Castlevania game. That is mind-bogglingly bonkers. The Suikoden team is now making Uiden Chronicles. You know, it's just a Suikoden game. That's all it is. They're making that now.
Yeah.
Obviously, Kojima left the company long ago under a black cloud, and so nobody's figured out what to do with Metal Gear Solid, because he was very much the mind and spirit behind that franchise. God knows what you do with it now. It's just mind-bogglingly dumb. I mean, even had a Silent Hill game being made by Kojima with Guillermo del Toro's influence, and that had to be scrapped as well. PT, that wonderful playable teaser, which scared the living crap out of everybody when it launched on PS4 about 5 years ago. It's insane. The only license they've used pretty much in the past 4 years is Contra, which they had that dreadful... And Contra's a fantastic video game series as well before. I'm not putting any shade on Contra, but they had... What was it called? Contra Rogue Corp?
Rogue Corp, yeah. I think that was it, yeah.
Absolutely appallingly bad. You had to reload in a Contra game. No. That's absolutely, completely wrong. I have no idea what they're doing. We really need Konami, because they're never going to make a good game themselves. They announce a Castlevania game and it's a fucking mobile game, because it's just a troll at this point.
Yeah.
You need somebody to just come along and just pay the money to license these games off them. It needs to be almost like a sudden Spider-Man Marvel deal, where, you know, Marvel makes them so that they're good, but Sony still gets the money. We kind of need a very similar thing with Konami. We just need somebody to say, look, come on, guys, we'll give you some money. We'll make it. You'll get a cut. Just let's get these franchises back on the map again.
Yeah, it's the only way. I completely agree. I mean, they're just sitting on everything. And then even the ones they're not sitting on, you know, you look at what's happening to Pro Evolution Soccer now known as eFootball. Yes. You know, they've morphed that into this free-to-play monstrosity, which, you know, it's a train wreck. It's launched with only two difficulty settings, about 8 football teams, and people's arms get merged into each other. Like, they've destroyed the only competition FIFA's had in generations. That's dead now as well. So, yeah, I that's it. I don't trust them to make games anymore. Like, I actually would be happy if they just keep making their pachinko machines. You know, just all they want is these licenses to make pachinko machines. So you are right. Just let somebody else make games, which will, you know, keep these series alive, keep them in the public consciousness. And then when people go to your little gambling arcades, they'll be like, oh, nice, it's Silent Hill Pachinko. And they'll play it because they remember that good Silent Hill game that just got made by not Konami. You know, it works for them as well. I just wish they'd do it, because, yeah, there's no hope now, man. For Konami to make these things, especially Metal Gear Solid. Metal Gear is the biggest one here that I just can't see. I just can't see a future for it in Konami, frankly. I can only really see a future for Metal Gear if Kojima Productions is allowed to make a game of it, which will never happen.
Well, I mean, it's pretty telling that the only rumors we hear about these games at this point is remasters and remakes, because people know that there's not going to be a new entry in these titles. People's hope for Metal Gear Solid at the moment is that they announce a remaster or a complete remake of the first game. And I don't necessarily have a problem with that, ignoring the fact there's already been a remake of Metal Gear Solid 1, which is perfectly playable and perfectly good. Mm. And do we need to get into the bloody movie studio trope of just remake things that were good when we were younger? But it's all you can do with these guys, because they're not going to be able to make something new. It's not going to happen. They don't give the money to the teams. They don't give the teams the time and the work they need to turn out something decent. So all you can hope is that, you know, the endless rumor that Sony has somehow cut a deal with these idiots. You know, it's all we've got to hope for at this point. But they just don't seem to care. They still make so much money. Konami is such a profitable company. Despite itself, that why would they make anything? Game development is expensive. If they're turning a profit on crap mobile games and pachinko machines and their other multimedia endeavors, why would they risk bringing out a new Sui Coden game in the year of our Lord 2021? No one's going to buy it apart from idiots like us, but I'd love to see it. I'd love to see a new Zone of the Enders game. It ain't going to come. You know, there's so much. I'd love them to localize Tokimeki Memorial, but God damn it, they're not going to do it, because it's not worth the financial risk. And they've found themselves in a no-lose situation, which is tragically means that all these licenses may as well just be dead.
Yeah, well, that's it, exactly. You know, the only places you will see these licenses is on the top of a pachinko machine now. That's the only place to see it, or on mobile, as you said. You know, I don't know. It's a tricky one. Like, I guess the people in charge of Konami, it's tough to blame them massively. At the end of the day, it's a business. It's about making money. And regrettably, pachinko and mobile games with microtransactions make a lot of money without much risk. You know, putting all of the, you know, the development effort it would take to spin up a team ready to make a new Metal Gear at this point for Konami would be huge. Or a new Castlevania. You know, they have no reason to take on that risk when they can just, you know, put out a Castlevania collection or license out Metal Gear 1 to be remastered by someone else. There's no incentive for them to do it. And I don't see a way out of this, sadly, for fans of these series. I think you've just kind of got to hope that some good spiritual successes come along. You know, like Bloodstained is a perfectly adequate Castlevania replacement. You know, it had some solid 2D games. It's had a really good kind of Symphony of the Night clone as well. I think you just got to hang your hat on those now and just hope that enough competition shows up there that you can play those instead.
Yeah, that's all you can do. Support the developers and the creators, most of whom have long since left the company. And that's why no Konami announcement can be exciting, because all the talent that was there has left anyway. Whatever's left is the dregs, let's be honest. I'm sure they're all trying their absolute hardest, but at the same time, most game developers worth their salt will want to actually develop games. So they're not going to want to be sat at a company which just doesn't seem to want to. So you've got to support these spiritual successors instead. Give the money to the Kickstarter campaigns. Give your time to them when they eventually do come out. It's the only way we're going to see more of them now is by supporting these spiritual successors. So, you know, when Gold Gear Solid comes out later in the year, you know, give that a play. When Almost Silent Hill comes out, you know, just give that a go. It's got to be, you got to take the knockoffs at this point. It's all we've got.
Almost Silent Hill, just like Quiet Hill. You know, it's not silent. It's not quite silent. Just
quiet enough.
Yeah, it's a quiet hill. But yeah, exactly. So yeah, definitely do that. That's the only way out of the situation, sadly. But you know, yeah, these creators are still out there. They're in different development teams now. They're still making quality games. So just keep an eye on the creators of the franchises you loved, you know. Don't get too hung up on the actual names of those series, because they're a lost cause. Okay then, so that is the end of this week's Games Club. So next month on Games Club, we are, you know, going back to those Nintendo 64 online titles we mentioned earlier. We are going to be playing the weirdest edition from the original nine that are going to be coming out in a week's time, which is Winback Cover Operations. This is a third-person shooter made by Omega Force, the people who almost exclusively make Dynasty Warriors games at this point, or the spin-offs like Hyrule Warriors or Persona 5 Strikers. They, you know, in the late 90s, they were making a third-person shooter. And another thing that's pretty interesting about it is it's seen as one of the games that pretty much spawned the idea of having cover systems in shooting games, which for the late 90s is pretty impressive. So yeah, it'll be cool to check that one out. It'll be cool to see, well, cool and scary to see how it's holding up at this point in time.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty fun. You're going to send me your N64 controller, so we're both going to play it properly, pad in hand. It's going to be a good time.
That sure is not going to happen. But anyway, yeah, so that is next month, of course. Next week on Pixel Mix, we are back to Games of the Month. And of course, this time we're going to be covering all the big games from October. So we've got Metroid Dread, which we spoke about a bit earlier on. We've got Back for Blood, which is on Game Pass if anyone wants to check it out there. We're also going to be covering Super Monkey Ball, Banana Mania, both pretty big Monkey Ball fans. So that should be a lot of fun. And yeah, you know, it should be a good show. Looking forward to talking about all those games.
Yeah, bring on that Dread conversation. Ooh. Yes,
I'm very interested to talk about Metroid Dread, but yeah, that is of course a problem for next week. But until next time, if you want to catch us on social media, you can find us on Twitter at PixelMixPod. If you want to drop us an email about any of the games we cover on the show, do get in touch via email at PixelMixPod@gmail.com. So until next time, I'm Andy Wood.
And I'm Josh Stevenson.
And we will catch you next week.
Goodbye.